Something Curious, a Northern Michigan University podcast connecting community through conversation. I'm your host, Haley Bussell, and you're listening to Something Curious. Within each episode, we pull a person from Northern's community and Marquette's community to discuss a similar subject matter. Today's episode, Running Waves, covers how sports such as running and surfing can drive someone to create a business. Our guests include Ian Pope, a Northern Michigan University student who decided to create his own surfboards, and Kevin Thompson, an NMU alumni and owner of Queen City Running Company here in Marquette. But first, we have Ian.
Yeah, so my name's Ian Pope. I'm currently a senior here at Northern, final year, thank goodness, and I'm a GIS major. So GIS is Geographic Information Systems.
Okay.
Old-timey was a big dude on a drawing board who did maps. The modern equivalent is computers. It's all, computers are so much smarter than we are. Yeah. They don't get stuff wrong. Yeah. You lay a baseline, it knows right where to be. You know, it's not your hand that's going to mess it up. It removes a lot of errors. So GIS is modern cartography, essentially.
Okay.
Management of it. So if you're an organized person, and you like the outdoors, I think it is a good balance of outdoors times and puzzles and organization time of a computer. So,
yeah, that's cool to know that there's a spot for that too.
Yeah. It's kind of, it's. I think it's one of the only majors that starts with a G. So if you go through the programs list, it's
easy to find.
Right there, yeah.
Picking classes.
And there is a need for it. There is still very much a need for GIS. Don't think that just because we know where everything is generally in the world that we don't need maps anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We're still changing the earth, so
yeah.
We gotta map the change.
Definitely.
I guess we might as well start at the beginning. So I started, when I first came up here as a freshman, I'd worked as a bike mechanic back in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Shout out to the Recyclists, if anyone's ever listened.
That's a great name.
Oh yeah, they're even greater people that work there. So yeah, I knew how to be a bike mechanic, and I knew that there's a lot of bike shops up here. I'd come up here biking a couple times, had a great time. And I went to Downwind. I was like, hey, it was just perfect timing. Cause like their old bike mechanic had just left and they needed a new one. I'm like, hey, like I'm a bike mechanic. I understand if you guys don't have a spot open, but they're like, no, like we totally do. Like get up there.
Wow.
So like that day I actually got pretty much hired on the spot, went upstairs, started to work. And that's where I met, Jack Johnson.
Funny story. Right when I transferred here, I was really interested in learning how to surf. But I reached out to him, and then I was like, because he was like the president of the surf group on campus, and then I was like, there's no way that his name is Jack Johnson.
It is.
And it's, I mean, if you don't know who Jack Johnson, the guy I'm thinking about is, he's this surf musician who
Banana Pancakes.
Yeah, he sings like Banana Pancakes and so many other really good songs, but I digress. So you're talking to Jack.
So Jack was the president of the surf club, which... In his words, the surf club, because I am now the unofficial half, well, Trent graduated, so yeah, that leaves me president of the surf club.
Wow.
I didn't realize I had that title in this world.
Look at you.
But the thing with the surf club is it's very surf. We have very unofficial meetings. Yeah, so it's kind of, it's not really a club, but it kind of is.
Yeah.
It's one of those kind of deals. I think more meetings are held in the water than actually in someone's house.
Which for a surf group, that makes sense. It should be that way.
It should be that way. Yeah, nature oriented is what I like to think of it as. But so Jack really did a lot of groundwork though of kind of getting like a Facebook page set up and everything. Mm-hmm. So I met Jack, and at the same time too, I was a pre-med student. I had the lust in the zeitgeist. I was like, you know, I'm going to go be a doctor in this world. And Jack was like, hey, so I know this is like a couple weeks in. He's like, hey, I know you're making the big bucks. Like, I know that hospital isn't paying you less than minimum wage. Like, I know they're paying you pretty well. And I'm like, yeah, you're not wrong, Jack. Like, where's this going? He's like, well, there's a wetsuit downstairs. It's your size. Already checked. And I got a board for sale. $300. I got this other kid interested, but if you'll buy it, like, I'll sell it to you today. I'm like, I don't know if he knew that, like, payday was just a couple days before, but I made it all happen that day. And as luck would have it, a couple days later, I got some waves and I got probably the most Jack instruction possible, which is, the jump in points up here. Like, I didn't even have gloves. Like, I think I just had boots.
She'll be so cold.
Oh,
what time of year was it?
May.
Okay. Wow. That's even. Oh yeah, my so gosh.
Like, I think Jack kind of gets a kick out of watching that kind of stuff happen. Like that's like, that was my favorite thing with Jack at the bike shop is Jack would kind of like, he knew you were doing something wrong, but like he kind of liked watching it go wrong to a point. And that kind of like brought humor to him a little bit. So I think this might've been one of those situations. But yeah, so he took me to Presque Isle. So it's just the pretty prominent surf spot of the zoo. And pretty much like I'm surfing this big 10-foot log. It's literally a coffee table. Like, my gosh, if you can stand on a coffee table, you can stand on this thing. It's pretty easy to surf. But yeah, so Jack leads me into the water and next thing I know, he's paddled away way faster than I can paddle, and I'm alone, thrown into the fire. But like I said, you know, Mother Superior teaches you quick. So that was pretty much my first day surfing. Really kind of caught on from there. Jack showed me some other spots around the area. We kind of chased the surf together in and out, like when we had the time with work, or when we both had free time, we'd go surf a little bit. Here and there. I know he spent a lot of time. He's on Lake Michigan, down there by Traverse City, yeah. By Empire.
Oh, I love that spot.
Shout out to Sleeping Bear Surfing Kayak. great people. as time goes on, I really fell in love with surfing. Really just had a really awesome passion for it. It clicked. Because, like, with skiing, I love skiing. I skied a lot in high school, but when I came up here, I worked at a ski hill, so I couldn't justify paying for a lift ticket. Yeah. It just kind of hurt, you know? Yeah. You get it free for so long, and then they're like, not $20. I'm like,
I know.
Don't really want to do it.
Yep.
So I needed something else that was free. And I realized, too, on an environmental sense, how pure surfing can be. Because you don't have to build a trail. You don't have to cut down trees. You know, the only thing you need is just a good storm, and you're not taking anything. Well, you are. Like, the boards and the wetsuits aren't the nicest things in the world, petroleum products, but beyond that, you're not really doing much damage. So environmentally, it's really good. So I really fell in love with it. But then kind of the way it started leading into me building surfboards, I don't know why. I had gone surfing alone. It was like, this was sophomore year, I think. The spring of my sophomore year, Joe was going to come and take photos, but he had to go do some like sunrise photos or something.
And Joe is one of the photographers right now in the marketing department at Northern.
Humble person, very humble. I love him for it. So Joe was supposed to take some pictures, but I go out surfing anyways on my own because I'm not going to wait for him. I went to McCarty's Cove, which is just, for those who don't know, right on Lakeshore Drive there. And the ice had literally just left, and it hadn't crossed my mind that some of the sand might still be kind of frozen. And the ice does weird things to the sand in the beginning of the year. It kind of leaves like these big wellets, these big pockets. And I paddled out and I caught a couple good ones, but on like my last wave in, I jumped off the board and my foot landed in a pocket and it took my foot up and to the side and it cracked my fibula. Spiral fracture up the side. I felt the pop, I heard the crack and everything, but you know how you kind of lie to yourself when that happens? You're like, oh, it's not broken. Like, I'm fine.
Yeah. And was this shallow enough for you to be able to get out of it?
Like, knee deep. Yeah, that's why I'm disappointed in myself that like I should have waited for Joe to be there. Cause like if it was any deeper, I might have been in some trouble. I used the surfboard and I hobbled down the beach, got in my car, drove home, got the wetsuit off somehow. Don't know how. Cause I'm not about to let the emergency room cut that off. But yeah, so I get the wetsuit off, I'm laying in bed and my girlfriend comes in and I'm like, yeah, nah, I'm in a rough spot. She like looks at my ankle and it's like three softballs up my leg. And she's like, nope, hospital. It's just time. Like, come on, you know it's time. We just gotta go. And like they take the first x-ray and I look at it and it looks beautiful. Like head on, everything's together, everything's there. I'm like, yes, no fracture. And then they go to the side view and you can see the fibula spiral. And I'm like, gosh, darn it. So I was up for a while.
Yeah.
And that kind of, you know, you lay around a lot, you really get to ponder life. A lot of creative management is what I like to think of it.
How long were you out?
So I was in a cast for a good 4 weeks, for a good month I was in a cast. Then I was in a boot for about another six. And then after that, they put me in a brace for a while and it came back pretty good,
yeah.
I think. I think I had like, shout out to the PEEF as well. I think going to the PEEF kind of gave me enough muscle to get through it. Because then, like, I don't know, I just had the muscle strength, like, to, the bone just needed to heal, but everything else was ready to rock and roll again. Yeah. So I had a lot of time to sit there and ponder. And, like, in that pondering, I kind of was like, well, I really love surfing, like, and I'm going to have a house next year. I might as well, let's take a crack at making some surfboards, because I just kind of, like, really love that kind of creative process. Because it's really working with your hands. Like, it's a real... Yeah. At first, I thought it would be much more, like, mechanical, like, just, like, you in a planer and just buzzing through foam.
Yeah.
But it really comes down to a lot of handwork. It's very artistic, and I love that. It's a good creative expression. I got the Surfer's Journal for my birthday, like, a subscription, because they're really beautiful to read. They're more like a book than anything.
Sure, sure.
But in there was an article by Maurice Cole, and he kind of called out, like, how the surf industry is even moving itself away from craftsmanship. So, like, I still had interest in wanting to do that by hand, and I still had the hospital job, so still was kind of rolling. Daddy Warbucks, still making the money. So I realized it was going to be expensive, but I had the change. So, pretty much the week after school was out, went to Home Depot, bought everything I needed a planer. I needed a router, bought the jigs and everything, spent a good $500 on tools. that was a nice total to watch zing away. And then I ordered foam from California. I know I've heard a lot of people talk about that, you know, you can just use insulation foam. Not true. You need a expanded polystyrene or like a polyethylene, and it needs to be of a certain pound density. Without it, you know, you glass the board and then you go to surf it, you punch your foot right through the fiberglass. Wow. Like the foam's just too soft, and the buoyancy is not there either. It's just not right. So went to the source, ordered from California, had it shipped by truck, got here, took the blanks downstairs, and it was kind of a labor of love for a good couple weeks. Kind of looked like a snowman every time I came out because of all the dust. But I got the first couple shaped, and then the next big step after that was glassing. You use fiberglass cloth and epoxy. That is about as stressful as it gets, because you mix the epoxy. Depending on the temperature, you have about 30 minutes before that stuff will harden. It's really more like 20, because by 20, it's pretty jelly. It won't move much. Yeah, so you got 20 minutes to move. But you put on some tombs and you jam, and you get it done. So it was cool. That was a huge learning curve, because that, oh my gosh, epoxy's hard to move. And if I ever had the time, I hope to go out to the West Coast and learn how they do it.
Yeah.
Because I think I was really, I still think I did some things really wrong.
But I mean, how else are you going to learn? You kind of just have to, like, jump into it and hope for the best.
You know, I thought maybe, like, I kind of had, like, a little bit of a business opportunity almost.
Yeah.
But it's just, as a college student, I can't afford the upfront costs, the capital to keep buying blanks. I made four boards. I still have two of them. The first one's pretty ugly, but it's my baby. It's my favorite one out of the bunch so far. And then I still have one left. But the other two I did sell. I think one is on the West Coast now.
Nice.
She moved out west, and then the other one is still here in Marquette. I'm very in love with them, even though they don't compare to, like, man, you watch Instagram and you watch, like, you go down your newsfeed and you're, like, following all these, like, big time shapers and all these, like, little, even like the little board shops, and you watch their shapers put out boards, and they're just like, dude, how did you do that?
Yeah,
it's just like you said, it's a real craft.
Yeah.
It's a real, and I think there's a lot of idiosyncrasies involved that, like, you learn either A, with a lot of experience of 20 years of doing it, or someone mentors you and teaches you. Yeah. So,
man.
Yeah, that's how I, well, and then we dubbed it Basement Boards, because I was making boards in my basement, and I thought that was really original until I read an article in the Surfer's Journal, and I learned that name had already been taken in, like, the 70s by this group of dudes who made boards in the basement of some house in, like, the Philippines or something.
Man.
So, a little sad that I'm not as original as I thought.
we all happens.
It happens. So, yeah, that's how I got into making surfboards, essentially. It was too much free time because of a broken leg, so...
So could you see yourself doing more with it in the future then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think my primary goal is, like, whenever I find my humble abode, you know, the final resting place for a good amount of my life.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to take or build a shed or whatever sheds in the backyard. I'm just going to take that. And I think I'm just going to like, I'm going to waste a lot of money. To my girlfriend, I'm really sorry that you have to hear that, but I'm going to waste a lot of my money just trying to make a surfboard that I'm really proud of.
Yeah.
And I'll keep them all. Yeah. Or I'll sell a couple maybe here and there. I think it would be fun if, because like I said, I really can't picture myself leaving Marquette that much. I like to dream and think like, oh yeah, the West Coast. Like I really, like I got that inside me. Like, mm-hmm. like everyone does, I think, to want to go and see the other greener pasture. But I really think through my time with the GLCC, which is the Superior Water Partnership, that's like the working side of that with the crews going out to do the labor work. I really think the UP is very something much so special.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm going to wind up being able to full heartedly leave it forever. So I think like it would be cool to come back to Marquette as an older gentleman. Beyond the looks, you separate the looks, there's a feel of the UP that you can't get past. It just speaks to you on a deeper note. Sixth sense, if you will.
Yeah, well, and also if you get into the point where you're in a community of people from mm-hmm. the UP or have been living here long enough and you find that good community, that's also for me what makes it so special up here.
Yeah.
It's because you get those little niches of people and it's really great when you encounter that. I mean, I just think that it's incredible, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, the community-centric aspect of the UP is also just as beautiful as the nature. How much everyone cares about each other, I think, is very powerful, very powerful. And I think that, once again, is probably from the nature. Like we were talking about earlier, I think it really, you know, 300 inches of snow in the winter will breed community like none other.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It really is.
So.
How did you find out about Northern then?
Oh, man. How did I find out about Northern? So my Northern experience, I guess, started off kind of with my family coming up here as a kid. I knew about the UP. I knew a lot more about Tech because that's where my brother went. But with Northern, it was a friend of mine. We worked at the same ski hill in high school. And she's an awesome person. You know, we had a great time in high school. And she was the one who was like, hey, like, I'm going to school. And I was on the track to go to community college at the time. I was like, yeah, I'll just go to community college. I'll save some money. But then I kind of sat back and thought about it more. And I was like, that's kind of lame. Like, I'm not going to get an experience. Like, I'm not going to broaden my horizons. I'm not going to grow as a human being if I sit here in Appleton. And so I quite honestly filled out the application, got accepted. That was pretty painless. And I had never actually toured our campus until orientation. I showed up and I was confused by Cohodes. I thought this was one of the academic buildings. I was like, am I in the right place?
And Cohodes is one of like the administrative buildings, if you guys don't know who that is or where that's at.
It's very prominent. Confuses you right away.
It is. But you're like, where am I? I have no idea what this is. Yeah.
And you kind of figure out the campus is like this long
running
thing, and then you figure out where everything is. But yeah, so my first time coming to Northern was orientation. And I loved it from day one. So it's been great ever since. I feel like the whole greater Great Lakes region is just so community centric. And a lot of the people, and I wouldn't explain that, like, you know, the farther north you get, the more that really becomes prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be best explained A, through the culture, through the people,
mm-hmm.
But also B, through the climate. Mm-hmm. You know, 300 inches of snow, you get to know your neighbor.
Yeah, which I really hope you do, because in certain situations, you really have to.
You need them. Yeah. Oh, seriously. Yeah. That wind comes out of the north, man. It's
Be pretty intense.
You're in it, yeah.
Yeah.
We've had it lucky for a couple of years.
Oh, definitely.
I'd missed it the year before my freshman year, I heard was just that polar vortex year. That was bad.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing, if I have any warning for anyone, it's winter.
Yeah.
You gotta find something to do, because otherwise it will get old.
Well, and make a purpose for the snow. Mm-hmm. I mean, make a purpose for it being around. I mean, people were asking me, like, I don't know how you deal with all the snow up where you're from, because the lake dumps on the city that I'm from.
Okay.
Just like it does in the UP, because all of the lake effect just like right in that area, which is fine because I like the snow because I snowboard. Made a purpose for it.
Exactly.
And then I just would say that to people. I'm like, yeah, well, like, if you like to snowshoe or you like to hike in the winter or you enjoy cross-country skiing or you like to snowboard.
Well, like, and I would not lie to people, too. Like, if you do like to hike, like, please look into snowshoeing, because it's about 80 times easier than summer hiking.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's so much easier.
It's really fun, too. Yeah.
You can see a lot more. You can go a lot further, a lot faster than you can with even like in the summertime, I would say.
You think? Because
the snow really kind of covers everything. Because, I mean, you think about it. In summer, you're stopping to look at every root and watch your feet. But when you snowshoe, you can just haul.
Go.
You can go. Yeah, because it's cool.
Hiding all of those
And if you like, you know, snowshoeing sounds even kind of remotely interesting. Like, can I please recommend cross-country skiing?
Really?
Because that's like, I mean, that's really the tradition of up here is cross-country skiing, too, is part of it. But, like, that's cool on a history side, but also it's just, it's fun. You have a little bit of downhill, you get to ski a little bit. And it's really easy to do. Any kind of interest, you know, I mean, 40 minutes, you're a master. You've got to figure it out. So, and you see a lot more terrain quicker.
Well, that's the thing that's cool about coming to school here is that we get to use the resources from the PEEF.
The PEEF,
you can rent out equipment. You can rent out snowshoes. You can rent out cross-country skis.
And if I'm not mistaken, too, we now have a partnership with
the Keweenaw Trail Network.
Yeah, and the NTN.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they have an endless, working for Downwind, I can speak that they have a lot of skis because I've waxed them all, and it takes a long time.
I can imagine, yeah.
And we have a gorgeous trail system. I think it's 40 miles of groomed trail to ride.
Yeah.
So if that even sounds remotely interesting.
Yeah.
Bam, we've got it.
And during our interview with Ian, we found out some curious facts about his family's history and how it relates to the Upper Peninsula.
My family history is on my mom's side, we are related to the Brockways.
Okay.
The Dee Dee Brockway, or no, not Dee Dee. Dee Dee's the first initials of the Harris, but Brockway was the first white man to set foot on the Keweenaw Peninsula.
Wow. Brockway Mountain.
Brockway Mountain.
Yeah.
Yep, darn right.
Yeah.
So I'm related to him. So my mom was always really interested with the area. And if you ever go towards Copper Harbor, you'll go through the little town of Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
You look on the right side, there's a little general store. And that's where my family ran that for like 2 years, 3 years. And then he got married, brought his wife up here to run the general store, and she hated the winter.
Mm-hmm.
So they moved back south to Shelbyville, Michigan, 124th Avenue, where they opened a general store. And that is where my grandpa lives today.
For our next guest, we have Kevin Thompson from Queen City Running Company. Now, Kevin and his family have an interesting history in this area as well. Something else that Kevin covers really well is about how Marquette's community cultivates around recreation, specifically running.
So we have a background. My background is my grandpa moved to Marquette in 1946 and started Johnson Sporting Goods.
Okay.
They were the first kind of sporting goods shop in the area, and for 76 years we had that family store, and it just got to a point, it was, I don't want to say outdated, but stuff changes, you know, and families don't always adapt to change. And we were trying to do too much of baseball and tennis and hockey and skiing and all this stuff, and you know, I talked to my dad at that point. My grandpa had passed away in 2000, so it had just been us two, and I said, you know what, let's just downsize, let's do what we do well, let's focus on shoes, and kind of rebrand it a little bit, and I think it was dead. Like, Johnson's was a dying brand at that point. In the 70s and 80s, we were it, you know, but we never jumped on the e-com wave, and we just didn't evolve, you know. It's kind of that adapt or die rule, and we didn't, you know. And so as a young man, you know, for me, it was really frustrating. I was like, come on, Dad, let's do this. Let's jump on and change this around a little bit. So after arguments and talking, we decided to do it, you know. So he sold the building, and I said, Dad, this will get you closer to retiring. But my dad's very passionate, so he still works with me full time, which is awesome. He's great. He's the guy that you go to for shoes that you've gone to for years. And then we rebranded it and didn't stick with Johnson's anymore, which was a big issue, but it was something that we needed to do, and went to Queen City Running Company. As far as me being a runner, this is my dirty little secret. I wasn't always a runner.
Well, I mean, no one was always a runner. You got to start somewhere.
So we sold running shoes for years. And I mean, I ran a little bit, 5K here and there, But as soon as I opened it up, I was like, oh, shoot, I gotta start running now if I'm going to be selling these things to. So immediately I jumped in, and I hated running, just like everybody usually does that's mm-hmm. newbie to it.
Yeah.
And I did a couch to 5K program. And, you know, but as soon as I got over that hump and then kind of got involved in the running world in Marquette, because it's a very strong community in the UP, yeah. I fell in love with it. And just and from there, I was like, all right, let's do this race. Let's do a community event for everybody. Let's start doing group runs for everybody. So we've really evolved over the last 2 years and created this kind of mecca for all things running. So now we have, I mean, people, I think we've kind of become a destination for, especially in the UP, people coming from all over on weeknights in the, you know, in the summer to join us for group runs, and not only that, they're shopping, which is great. So yeah, that's kind of my dirty little secret that yeah. I wasn't a runner, but now I love it. You know, I've gone from that couch to 5K guy to really involved in starting to get involved in the ultra marathon scene and you know, trail running, and yeah. So that's a little bit about my background and where we've come from.
Yeah, something I'm curious about is I am not huge into running,
sure,
but I like sports that you're doing that don't make you feel like you're working out, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. because it's fun, you know?
Yeah.
And something that I always struggle with while I'm trying to run, because I do try to run.
Yes.
Like, it's just I've never felt that, like, feeling that I'm like, oh, I really enjoy this, you know? And, yeah. like, in my head, I'm always like, oh, okay, this, like, really is not fun at all
yeah,
right now.
Sucks.
Like,
yeah.
this is terrible. Yeah. So how did you, like, how did you get over that?
Right. So that was the one thing when we started doing group runs, and you make it a social event. Right?
Really?
So
okay.
we have people of all different, you know, our one of our mottos is find your happy pace.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, yeah. And it's true, though. It's like you don't have to go out just because you're 22 and someone else you know is 22 and they run a, you know, 6 minute mile. You go out and run a 12 minute mile. Who cares? Go out with your friends and it's more peace of mind, you know. So I enjoy the social aspect of getting, and that's what got me over the hump.
Sure.
Go at a pace where you can talk, you know. You don't yeah. want to be out of breath. It's not fun.
Yeah.
And if you got to walk a little bit, you got to walk a little bit. It's yeah. not a bad idea. As long as you're moving, you get that hour of exercise or a half hour exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you just feel great after you do it.
Yeah.
And then it gets to a point where it feels great while you're doing it.
Wow.
So you look forward to it. It's almost that, you know, there's a lot of addicts that are great runners
because
yeah. there is an addicting property to running.
Yeah.
And that's what it's become for me. It's a lifestyle thing. I got to get my run in an hour to myself a day or with a friend or a group of friends. And, you know, it's that zen that I get out of it.
Yeah.
So, but you're right. It's a struggle to get going. So we always encourage people, create a group to go out with, you know, make it a social aspect. Go out to dinner after,
yeah.
you know, go for a beer after,
yeah.
if that's your thing. You know, but earn it, you know, you can go that way. And God, we live in one of the most beautiful places in the world, right?
It's amazing.
I mean, and we are so fortunate. I've been around the UP. I mean, the UP is beautiful, but Marquette specifically is beautiful for runners. It's got paths all over. We have, you know, over 80 miles of beautiful scenic single track just in Marquette, just
yeah.
in the city. That's crazy. That's kind of unheard of in most
yeah.
towns.
Yeah.
So to have all that at your, you know, doorstep is just, it's a neat opportunity, and you just got to find time for it in your day. And it really is beneficial, I think, to your mental health, if anything,
yeah.
if not physical health.
Yeah. That's interesting that you mentioned adding the social aspect in, because
mm-hmm.
another thing that I had in my mind too is like, oh, I don't like running with other people.
Right.
I can't focus on a conversation.
Uh-huh.
All those things. So maybe I just have been doing it wrong this whole time.
Going too fast. You
yeah.
know, that's
yeah.
what I would say. You should be able to go at a conversational pace. So whether
yeah.
it is walking
yeah.
and it builds into a run
yeah.
or let's run a little bit. Let's run for 3 minutes and then walk for 2 minutes. That's okay. You don't have to be,
yeah.
you know, you don't have to be an elite runner.
Yeah, there's definitely this idea behind running and trail running and all this thing that has to be super intense.
Yeah,
when
no, it's
those people probably didn't get to that point right off the bat anyway. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, I don't know why. I didn't.
And the more I've got involved in the running community here, I mean, you go to this and you see 70-year-old ladies and guys that are running with, you know, 22-year-olds, and
yeah.
they might not all finish together, but that 22-year-old's going to be waiting for that 7-year-old at the end. And it's the camaraderie that
yeah.
is involved. It's such a cool
community building.
It really
for
is.
Sure.
It's such a neat lifestyle and community. There's a group that meets Wednesday mornings at the Commons,
yeah.
and you see all different body types there, all different ages, all different paces. And but what do? They all meet at Baby Cakes for Muffins after, you know, so it's something simple like
yeah,
that.
Plus
that really
it gets you out of your age group too. Cause
yes.
I feel like as a college student,
mm-hmm.
it's hard to find other age groups that you can interact with because
yeah.
you're just always around your age,
right.
you know, like it's
yeah.
just how it is when you're in college. So it makes sense to be doing things that like you're meeting other people, yeah. other age groups, other demographics, that's other good. Like everything.
So and as a young person, I mean, if you're doing it, it's great networking too.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of business leaders in the community.
Yeah.
And if you run a little bit with them, you know, they like, they love it. You know, yeah, so I can tell you, I've made great friends through business just through running too.
Yeah.
So there's all different beneficial aspects to getting in with these group runs.
I didn't think about that.
Yep.
Yeah, that's smart.
Good stuff.
So something that I was just thinking about while you're mentioning how much trails, like how many trails we do have here, as far as like the beauty and the scenic running. What do you guys do during the winter? Because I know that there are like different treads you can get that you can put on your shoes and like those kinds of things. Could you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, we, you know, we run all winter. In fact, it's my favorite time of the year to run, which sounds crazy, but
really?
It's like,
why is that?
I don't know. I got this weird psychotic, like, I don't know. I think it kind of brings me back to being a kid, like the smell of cold air and snow, and you're the only crazy six or seven people out on a -5 degree day, and it is beautiful and it's quiet and it's peaceful as long as you have the right gear on, obviously. It's not a big deal. And so yeah, you gotta buy obviously different gear. You know, you're buying different shoes for the winter, but are you getting treads on, you know, over the shoes? The apparel is a big thing. We don't want to get frostbite. And it's easy to get into a, you know, I've done 2-3 hour long runs at -0, you know, below zero temp, and you feel warm, but you don't have the right apparel on, and you get home and
you realize how cold you actually were.
The little piece of your stomach that was exposed is like beet red, if not purple, you know, so you got to be very careful, but it really is peaceful. We do, you know, as a store, we try to promote, obviously it's easy to get bogged down where we live too when it's cold and it's dark out. And so we promote, I mean, there's another thing. We have a dome that you can run in year round, and it's 70 degrees and it's free to the public.
What's the length around the dome? Like inside, like the outside, outer track?
Yeah, 3 laps is a mile.
Okay.
And you go down there in the middle of January, it's awesome. There's, you know, 100 people walking at night. And so we do our group runs. We offer Monday and Wednesday outside and inside during from January through March. So really there's no excuse, kind of, you know, there's that accountability that you got to meet up with your friends in the group to go. We usually meet at the dome, and there's a group of us that'll go outside and a group that stays inside. And then the awesome thing again with our single track around here, fat tire snow biking has become so huge that the folks at the NTN, Nequamina Trails Network, they're wonderful. They're fantastic. And they do such a great job grooming these trails. Mm-hmm. And as long as you're out on in certain conditions, you know, you always check at the shop if it's okay to go run.
Yeah.
Because let's be honest, the fat tire people are the ones that are grooming it. We don't want to ruin their single track.
Yeah, no, totally.
But it is so cool to run outside on that single track in the winter. It's like a, you know, it's actually easier. You don't have roots and rocks to worry about.
Yeah. I mean, it's a trail. It's groomed for you. Plus, it's packed down because
packed
the bikes
down.
Have been on it.
Yeah. And it's beautiful. I mean, we get back to that scenery.
Gosh,
that you
that
can just.
That whole area is just amazing.
It's really cool. They do such a great job in the South and North trails with that. So, yeah. So we try, again, we just try to make an enjoyable year-round activity. You can do it. You know, and it's, I think it's even cooler. You become like a tougher person out of it too.
One
of the beautiful things about where we live is you get to experience all four seasons at their extremes, I think too.
Oh, completely.
You know, you agree with me on that? You know,
yeah,
we get
I
the
totally
bitter
agree.
Cold, we get the hot, we
oh,
get
my gosh.
You know, the fall's gorgeous up here.
Yeah.
And springtime, hopefully you don't get too much spring. That's we call it mud season in the running world.
Yeah.
But you know, because that is the one time of the year that's tough, because we're all itching to get on we call it, at least the trail runners, they're itching to get on dirt.
Yeah.
You know, they either have races coming up, and a lot of times the trails are just too demolished from the thaw and the melt and everything. So, but still, I mean, you got outside and you don't see the sun for a couple months and it pops out and it's going crazy. Maybe 30 degrees, but everyone's got their shirts off and their little running shorts on and they're just running around town.
Like, right now it's the summertime, and if it was 30 degrees right now, everyone would
be
freezing. Oh my gosh,
right now.
It's so cold. And
yes.
Then as soon as there's like you said, any type of sun, like I've seen people lounging in like snowbanks and chairs with like shorts on. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, people are so crazy. Beer in like the best way possible.
It's good stuff.
No,
so.
I've never heard it referred to as like we get all four seasons in like the most extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It really is. So
yeah, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
I've never thought of it like that. So what are some popular running spots in Marquette?
Obviously we mentioned the Marquette's so blessed with They built a bike path, I think, in 1978, 1979. I mean, it's 2018, and you can go to a lot of these, most of the major towns in the UP, and they don't have bike paths, you know? So we're so spoiled that we have that to run year-round. It's plowed by the city. You don't have to dodge cars in the winter. It's basically a seven-mile loop, and it covers the whole town, which is really cool. You go through campus. You go along the lakeshore.
What's the name of that trail?
It's just a Marquette bike path. Yeah, you know, the path that runs along the lakeshore. You know, that cuts all the way through campus. Kind of leads you to Washington Street and behind Washington and takes you all back down to Delaware Harbor again. And that can, you know, that's, we just don't have that in any other towns in the UP. So you can run outside year round on that. The dome, again, we talked about that. You can run year round in the dome if you want to. And then again, our trail network here, we have Nequamina Trail Networks. We have the North Country Trail. We have, I am missing stuff right now, but the Harlow Lake trails, there's so much trail around here. It's amazing. And each day of the week, you could find a different 20-mile route that you don't even go on to. You're on a completely different trail network that whole day. So there's really cool. That's why I love trail running. You can get out and explore. I'm born and raised here, and I still find new trails, you know, that I haven't seen ever in
there's
my life.
There's
just
so much.
It's really cool.
The one part that I had never been to is down by Marquette Mountain. Mm-hmm. Not the South Trails, or is it Mount Marquette? I always forget. Mm-hmm. Mount Marquette's the ski hill, right?
Marquette Mountain's the ski hill.
Marquette Mountain. So it's by that river that's running down there.
Yeah, the Carp River.
Yep. There's like that whole mountain biking area down there, and I'm sure there's amazing trails.
So we run that all the time.
Yeah, it's so pretty down there and peaceful, too.
It is. It's really nice, and it's easily accessible. You know, that's the other thing. Most cities, you have to drive. You know, I talk to my friends in Grand Rapids and Detroit, Chicago, and they, you know, you got to drive a half hour to get to these, to anything that even kind of remotely resembles what we have. We can run to those trailheads from our homes.
Yeah.
You know, we can,
yeah.
We're a mile, you know, it's at most a 5-minute drive to get to these places.
Yeah.
So, it's really cool.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Man.
So, yeah, I think those are, you know, between the single track, the bike path, the dome, that's usually where you see most runners at. And then the treadmill, we call it. There's obviously every gym's got a treadmill you can always use too. So.
Yeah, that's another thing I'm not usually like too crazy about.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's just not enough stimulation for
me. Some people like it. They'll plug in their Walkman. God, am I old? Whatever you guys use now in their phone and listen to music or, podcasts. So, okay. Yeah, anyway. So, yeah, those are, I think, where you typically will find people running.
Okay, cool. How important has the community involvement been in developing your business? It sounds like you've touched on a lot of that already, but like you said, you have a lot of events going on throughout the year within like running. What are some of those events that you do?
We have something going on like twice a month at least. I try to make it a point. I mean, it's a lot of work and but again, where we live at, what we do, it's in the product I sell, you can buy online. Let's not lie. You can buy it. And with Amazon, you can have it in 2 days. We do a huge service, and it's not easy to buy shoes online, especially if you're into running. You can't just, you got to try stuff on. But you can also try stuff on and be a jerk and go out and maybe save $10 and say buy it on Amazon 2 days later. So what do we got to do? We got to build loyalty, brand loyalty. So we put on these events, and I love doing it too. That's why I love my job. We do 3 main races throughout the colder months when there's not many public races going on. We sponsor every race that's in town because we're the only running shop. So we're usually some kind of co-sponsor on every 5K to marathon that's going on in town. We do forums, talks, if you will, on winter running, on marathon training. We usually have one about every quarter. We usually try to do one of those with a different subject, and we have experts in and professional runners and physical therapists. We have, speaking of physical therapists, we have physical therapists at the shop twice a month that come in on a certain night.
Yeah.
So if we're having issues, we can talk to not just shoe salesman, but also medical professional and try to narrow it down.
That's amazing that you guys are incorporating like the actual.
It's important. Yeah.
I mean, that's what's going to keep you going.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We have a kids club. We run Wednesday mornings all summer long. We have a lot. There's always something going on.
Yeah. It sounds like it.
And if there's not, we got to create something. That's the way I always look at it.
No, definitely. So after you graduated, so you went to Northern.
Yes.
What was your major while you were here?
I graduated in hospitality management.
Nice.
I took 2 years out of, I was one of those kids that had to get out of Marquette as fast as I could, and I traveled and lived in Colorado and in Nevada and California and Virgin Islands. And so I got, you know, I got out and then got that out of my system. But I thought that's where I was going to end up, is hospitality, restaurants or resorts or something. And then came back, got in back into the family business, mm-hmm. and realize, hey, we're not such a bad place to be yet. And
yeah,
it's so, yeah, that's kind of my background as far as going into hospitality. Hospitality program was great. I learned a lot. Obviously, hospitality and retail go hand in hand.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so that was kind of a no-brainer. And the hospitality, the bachelor's program puts you through a lot of the business school too. So we had, you know, classes out of there that I learned a lot from too.
Nice. We went over a little bit of your history, but what is the history of the Queen City? I know that Marquette has been referred to as the Queen City, mm-hmm. but I don't really know why. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Because I guess I want to know more of the history.
The Queen City, there's like 38 Queen Cities in the country.
Okay.
All over. So the Queen City is an old term. It relates, so they used it a lot from 1880s, whenever Marquette was incorporated, 1846. And you're right around 1880, it got the nickname. And it basically it's the most important city in a geographical region that is not the capital.
Oh, that makes sense.
So the king and the queen. Okay. So Marquette was always referred to as the Queen City on Superior, or the Queen City of the North. Yeah, so we were the main shipping hub. You had the university, you know. So anyways, when we were trying to name the company, we had, you know, everyone does this Gichigumi, Superior. Everyone does a play on words for Marquette. 906 this, 906 that. So we were trying to come up with something different. My wife's actually the one that at Donker, she saw the old map from 1882 on the wall, and it just said the Queen City on Superior. And she said, what about Queen City Running Company? I said, that's got a cool ring to it.
It does. So, I like the name a lot.
Yeah, so that's where that came from.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. It's a neat store. If you haven't been to it, come down and check it out. Don't feel ever like you got to buy anything. Just come talk to us. If you're interested in running, walking, exercising, you get foot pain, arch pain, that's what we do. Half my customers aren't even runners.
Yeah.
You know, we work with everybody that's got any issues. We got a lot of business with that. We get a lot of referrals from the medical community that's, you know, they say, well, you don't need surgery. Just go get a good shoe and start walking. And so we're there to help out. And that's what we've been doing at Johnson Sports Shop. And then now that's what we do at Queen City. So yeah, come down and check us out sometime. If you ever got any questions, need local hints on running spots, want to join a running club, want to just come out and try it out, just come down and see us. We're very non-threatening. I know running can scare people sometimes, you know that word,
and yeah, it does get a little freaky.
Yeah, don't be intimidated by it. Again, I wasn't a runner. I hated running. That's my dirty little secret, but I forced myself into it. Now I love it. So if you want to get there and try it out, just come and see us.
Yeah. No, definitely.
Okay,
cool. Well, thanks for coming in.
Yeah,
appreciate
it, was fun.
It
yeah, anytime. Okay.
Thanks for tuning in to Something Curious and listening to our episode, Running Waves. Again, I'm your host, Haley Bustle, and we aim to connect community through conversation. This is a Northern Michigan University podcast that's released bi-weekly, so we'll catch you then, and please don't forget to stay curious.